presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. And I think I said, did I call? I think I called the young jock. Did I say Castro Rodriguez? Because I think it's Rodriguez Castro. I think it's Rodriguez. I'm gonna have to look it up. I think I got it backwards. No, there's you need a scorecard to keep track of all the fresh faces and names. Now, of course, a bunch of them are going to head south, soon enough. But Ortiz and I didn't mention Vargas either. Vargas, another one of the ones that are in town. So that was fun with Rich. Always great. We're going to have Eric Hallstrom join us momentarily, and I'll do most of the. I think we'll probably save a lot of the. I didn't go marauding into the results with Rich. Andy will be on tomorrow. I will mention one of the winners. Right, we had the visit from Marshall, and was that Tuesday? That was Tuesday. Yeah, and Friday, Category One, right? Category One, the and I'm laughing because Kelly Breen just got back to me. Let me just write to Kelly. I love it. Hold on. Yeah, you got the wrong. Yeah, come on, Casey. I'll send you the cell number. Let me tell. We'll probably come to Kelly Breen at the bottom of the hour. Anyway, Category One, the horse that is named whimsically with Pat Cummings in mind, was a clear winner in the sixth race at Aqueduct on Friday. And it's funny because he took a little money, ended up being the third choice, and I was shocked when I went to bet. I went to write the races up, I should say, and he was a crazy price. Where is it? I think he was six to one morning line. Hold on. Where is it here? There we go. It was 6 to 1 on David's morning line, which was actually co-third choice. Blackjack Davey was favored, who stopped like he was tied to a fence post. And he did go off favored at 5 to 2. And then 3 to 1 on Prince of Pharaohs, who also had been the 6 to 1 co-third choice. And who was second choice? Oh, Farragut. Farragut was the second choice at 3 to 1 and went off at 3 to 1. So really it held, except that the long shots went off longer, and these 6 to 1 shots went off shorter, essentially. Still, 940 was a very attractive number by the time the gates opened. So here you go, Casey. Let me give you this. And I'll save some of the other stuff. Kelly Breen's going to join us after Eric as well. And, there you go. I'm just looking, Eric. What did you have for Eric? Yeah, those are all, you can get rid of all those. The email's still good, but I think those are all old. Get rid of those old numbers. That's the... I just, a friend just sent, as we wait for Eric, A friend just sent me something wild. My friend Colleen on Facebook, the story from Saturday in St. Louis, and FanDuel, I guess, is partnering up with Fairmount, and they're going to change the name of Fairmount and put the FanDuel name over it. How about this? FanDuel Racing? Wow. This is a crazy story. Or crazy. I guess it's not a crazy idea, but geez, I'll have to go check back on that. How about that? So I guess that's part of the Illinois casino revamping that's going on, and of course Hawthorne well on their way to building. So I gotta check into that. We'll see. I guess it's not any different than Philadelphia Park becoming Parks. That's sort of the last place that did this kind of thing. So Eric Hallstrom is joining us. There we go. Eric, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Eric, we had to get you in here because it's the last few days of the season at Indiana, and not everybody necessarily is in tune with what a success story it's been this year at Indiana, and it's been so much fun playing the Pick Five and visiting with the. With the staff, mostly with Bill Downs, and I imagine that while it's a relief and certainly the work that's gone in, it's a lot of work and it's a relief to get to the end of the year, but it's really been a success that the industry should appreciate.
Well, nice of you to say that, and I'm very proud of the team here, because this has not been an easy year for anybody, and that's including us here. There's seemingly every day there was some hoop you were jumping through, but what you said is absolutely correct. We're going to end the season up or handle about 60%, and that stayed strong. We started off that way, and as we end the meet here, we're holding that right through the line, and it feels good too because everybody's worked really hard, and I feel for places like Golden Gate and Mahoning Valley right now and Zia who just worked hard and just couldn't get some luck and all that, but we have. And I think one of the things that you find sometimes in difficult spots is it forces you to really look at what your business is and what makes most sense. And in our case, I think we figured out we don't belong running on the weekend against the Churchills and Belmonts of the world. We belong Monday to Thursday, and I think we created something here that we're pretty proud of. And when your handle's up 60%, everybody feels good about it.
Well, we talked, as the season, even before the season started, and as you were making the adjustments and figuring out what was going to be, the best approach, and it just seems like every notion and the experiment. The experimentation that you tried paid off, including the all quarter horse cards, the early morning cards when there was international racing that the public was going to be paying attention to, or some of the big days, the Triple Crown style days. There were so many things that you experimented with, the low takeout Pick Five, obviously. An instant draw that was, overpaying and continues to overpay. I mean, every single one, if you do it via the parlay, it just overperforms repeatedly. I mean, there's been a lot of things that you were willing to try, and it's really a message that should, be taken to heart elsewhere around the industry.
Well, thanks. You know, and I take that a compliment very sincerely when I say I do appreciate that. Our group here, you know, when we knew that we weren't going to be able to do some of the fun things that we want to do on track, which hopefully next year we can mix in some Saturdays here and there to get back to why we all love being at the racetrack. But we came up with some thoughts that maybe looked like it could appeal to national players, and it's obviously worked. You brought up the Pick Five. It's not, you know, any stretch to think on any normal day without a carryover. You know, we're getting up close to 100,000 in that pool, and that's a good number for a Monday to Thursday track in the middle of the day. A lot of things have worked, and you know, I do think going forward, Monday to Thursday is our thing, and you find your niche, and then you just keep improving upon it. And we got some ideas for next year too. I don't think we've emptied the bag on everything we can try. That's for sure.
When it came to the you know, the mix of horsemen, address that, because it isn't as if you took away from, you know, from the racing in Kentucky, for instance. I mean, whether it was Kentucky Downs, Churchill, Keeneland, Ellis, I mean, you ran concurrently, you know, for an extended period. Sometimes it's hard for the tracks that, you know, that have extended seasons, you know, to maintain horse population. And how much of that was purse structure? How much of that is the Indiana bred program, you know, responsible? The Indiana, you know, the quality of the Indiana stake program is outstanding, and it's going to close out here the next few days as the season ends. I mean, talk a little bit about the composition that worked so well putting together these cards.
Yeah, so, you know, we're in a good spot here. You know, we're an hour plus from Louisville. We're, you know, a little over an hour some from Cincinnati, and Chicago's not that far, so we're in a location where we can be very important for the region, and our purse structure is very solid. You know, it's one of the things nobody really knew. Everybody running a racetrack wondered how their business was going to come back, and ours has been very good. You know, knock on wood there, because things seem to be changing by the week, and you never really know. It's hard to count on anything these days, but the purse structure here is so solid that, you know, we're going to have a significant underpayment in the next year. We just couldn't spend it all. You know, we got to a point where, you know, 6 weeks into our meet, I talked closely with our horsemen and said, we're just going to keep adding races. That's the first thing we can do. And when we can find one, and if we can find a six-horse field, we'll run it. And we'll just keep doing that until we go, and you know, we've supported that structure. But I think what you said is really right, that, you know, going into next year, Caesars has made a significant commitment to racing here in Indiana. And one of the things we've promised is over the next 10 years, we're going to spend $25 million in capital improvements. And we already started. We purchased a Eurosizer that's going in that we'll have ready by December. We're building a new barn, you know, spending $1.5 million on a new 100-stall barn that should be ready by April. We're building 50 dorm rooms on the backside for our backstretch workers, very nice new accommodations. And part of that reason is that we didn't have the capacity for the demand. You know, we could have had an extra 300-400 horses here this year if we had the room and the ability. Well, we're creeping that way now, where over time, instead of having 1,000 horses on our backside, we'll have 1,400, and it'll take us a few years, but it's all part of this process. And I think you'll just keep seeing Indiana racing, you know, prospering and getting better by the year. I truly believe that.
Hey, talk about when you say Indiana racing, quote unquote. I want to follow up on the breeding program, and it, you know, much like we have in New York and what you see in Louisiana. You know, there's regional programs that have that always seem to have a certain percentage of races. We watched at Canterbury, you know, this summer, and the Minnesota breds, but you know, the Indiana I would guess, I mean, what percentage of racing is the Indiana bred exclusive?
Yeah, we're averaging a little over three races a day. And, you know, that there's, I think anybody would say there's a good and bad to that. And the good is that you want that local program to keep growing, and it really is. I mean, that we're in trending the right way as far as an industry here in the state. You also need that open horse and those stables to be at your place. But, you know, you get to this time of year, and when you look around, and we're literally trying to fill races to use up purse money. You know, I believe that the horsemen deserve to run for the money that we made in that year, but we can't give it all away. You know, so now we're comfortable that we'll bring some into next year, but it has allowed us to use more Indiana bred races, which, you know, it's helping a lot of these people who, just like any other business, has really struggled in 2020. And I think everybody's pleased with where we've gotten to. You know, next year, what would I expect that we'd have three a day? I think so. And I think that's going to become part of what we do. But instead of three out of nine races, and I'm talking thoroughbreds here, three out of nine, maybe it's three out of ten. You know, that's how we keep growing the business. It's not, we're run 120-day meet. I don't know that you can go much longer than that at one venue in one stretch. So plenty of opportunities, and I'm starting to see, you know, some stallions come into the state and some very legitimate, you know, important breeding operations now looking at our program and saying, you know, where's this been? You know, how's it been? How is this possible? So the news is very good coming out of Indiana Grand. We're really, really pleased with how the meet's turning out.
What did you average? Do you have a field size average through this nearing the end?
Yep, we're in the thoroughbred side. We're going to end up a little over eight, you know, somewhere in that 8-1 range, and closing out strong. So that should stay good. But your point of asking that very, very meaningful statistic of field size. I think one of the things we're figuring out too is there's plenty of options to help people come in from ship from Kentucky and Illinois and other places to find the right races for them. And as we've gotten there, we're really excited. We've got a new director of racing, Chris Polson, who joined us from Arlington. Chris, fantastic guy. Very well, very, very well liked by the horsemen. Next year we'll have a stakes schedule that's probably a little bit different. And I know everybody's gonna be disappointed, but we're thinking about changing some names of some stake races. When we handed out the Florence Henderson Stakes the other day, I turned to Rachel and I said, "Well, how did we ever have the Florence Henderson Stakes?" And she just kind of shrugged her shoulders. She didn't get it either. But the point being, we got a lot of options over the winter here to find real legitimate places for horses to come and ship and make it easy for them with the accommodations that we have here.
Well, Florence Henderson, a native of Dale, Indiana, kind of a Indiana treasure. I mean, if you're going to name something, think about naming something after Shapiro's, which is one of my absolute favorites, the deli. So I could get behind a Shapiro's. The handicap.
I'm seeing maybe a name the steak race contest on the Steve Vick show.
That'd be great. That would be so much fun. There could be, you know, certainly you got little Milan in Indiana down there by the Ohio, you know, the source material for Hoosiers, right? You got the there's no shortage. There's tons and tons of the Tippy Canoe, and well, I think you have something like that anyway, right? There's the
We do, and you know, there's, and don't forget, you know, this year, just because of the compressed schedule, we postponed, you know, six stakes as it was. So those will come back, you know, next year. And
nice.
I think there's some opportunities. We didn't have anything available for sprinters and older horses, things that, you know, we just, we've got the purse money and we've got the, where we sit, we can fill these stakes. I think you'll see some things next year that are you know, pretty appealing for horse players around the country.
Nice. Well, it's been, I mean, tremendous fun to follow. And, you know, one of those places that I think a lot of players, you know, on Indiana Derby Oaks Day, you know, they tune in and, you know, the occasional other state card. But, you know, the way in which the year unfolded, it became, you know, pretty much imperative that you needed to look. And then when everybody saw what kind of payouts were being produced, you know, particularly by the low takeout pick five, you know, it you just start to get familiar with the horses, and you get familiar with, you know, the conditions and the series of you know, the stakes. I mean, for instance, you know, we're going to have another couple of stakes this week, I think on Wednesday, and you know, Unbridled Beast is back, and Flatter Him, and, you know, Operation Stevie. You know, you start to get real familiar with the classes of horses and how to approach it. It's been a revelation, I think, for not just for me, but for a lot of players. And you know, you mentioned Chris Paulson, and I mean, obviously, the industry at large troubled or you know, kind of forlorn over what seems to be an expiry date for Arlington. But to bring in somebody like Chris, Eric, I mean, not only were you a fabulous hire, but to bring in a guy like him, you know, with his Rolodex and you know, familiarity, I mean, that it's not like, not that there's anything wrong with bringing up a young up-and-comer out of the racing office, but to be able to instill someone like that at the head of the racing department is, especially in that region, it's, you know, it's a huge score.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Chris having the interest was something we're just, you know, very lucky to have. And part of that comes from, you know, just unfortunate circumstances in Chicago, and I don't root against anybody. That's just not the way it should be. So, but you know, in Chris's case, he also took a look and said, you know, wow, this program is growing, and there's, you know, we're building barns and dorms, and we got all new equipment on the racetrack, and you know, it's a really, really attractive place to be, and it's only going to get better because, you know, I think now, as you mentioned, we've got a 120-day meet coming that will start in April. And, you know, as a horse player myself, there's nothing better than familiarity. And if you've got where you know they've got eight straight months of racing, seven plus, you know, you can focus on a racetrack there and pick your spots and know who's coming up. And instead of having those same horses, you know, shipping somewhere else where maybe that's not, you know, the same circumstances don't apply. So I think we got plenty to offer, and you know, next year you'll see a lot of neat things that would make us even more appealing, I believe.
What's the start date next year, the target date?
Yeah, so we submitted our dates, and on December 10th we believe they'll be approved. It will start on April 13th, which is a Tuesday, and then go till the Breeders' Cup. We go to the Thursday of Breeders' Cup week in early November. 120 days, Monday to Thursday as a general rule. We'll have Saturdays, about one Saturday a month that we'll have quarter horse racing. And those will be the days where on track we can do some of the fun things the families want to do, and you know, that group may not be quite as particular with what they see out on the racetrack, whether it's thoroughbreds or quarter horses. They just want to be around racing and fun experience. So, all this obviously depends on the world coming a little bit more normal. And when that happens, we'll be ready. 2021 should be really something for us here, I would think.
Well, Eric Hallstrom, just delighted for everybody's success. And take a second and with some acknowledgments for, you know, for the team and the people that, you know, that made the year work.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me do that, because I promise you, we've got the best team here. And, you know, they're not only are they, you know, I start with Rachel and Bill and Nancy, I wouldn't trade them for anything. You know, they have, in a year, they just showed passion every day, and, you know, each of them brings something different. But behind the scenes, you know, Rachel's doing things that really, really respect, and she's very smart. And sometimes when she starts hollering at me about lipstick on Twitter, it gives away the fact that she's doing some things that nobody sees, where I go, wow, I'm super impressed. And Bill has been just fantastic. And, you know, Nancy's leaving here and going to, you know, maybe the premier meet in the winter now at Oaklawn. So she's obviously just as top-notch as you can get. And very lucky to have that group. And we wouldn't be the same without them. And, you know, they'll be back next year. And I know they love this place, too, which is something that I value a lot with people I work with. So it's been a great meet, a great team.
Eric Hallstrom, you had seemingly impossible shoes to fill with the passing of John Schuster, and when your name came up as the person that was tabbed, everybody said, "Well, they certainly, you know, they certainly found somebody that would be up to the challenge," and under the most difficult circumstances, it's been a remarkable year, and congratulations to you and everybody. It's been a real pleasure to forge this association again this summer with and fall with Indiana. It's a real privilege, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks to you, Steve, because I really mean that. Yourself and there's a couple others in the industry we've gotten real close to, and plan on doing that for long as I'm here and beyond, I assume. But, you know, you guys have done a lot for our business in a tough year. And, you know, we don't take that lightly. And, you know, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. But, you know, getting to this point here where I can see how there's tangible results from people like yourself is, we appreciate it. We'll look forward to next year. And I'm not kidding about that. Create the name the steak race.
Steak. All right, we'll do it.
Right now, Shapiro's is the only. But, you know.
I'll throw out a few. The Moonlight on the Wabash. We'll come up with a handful. Indiana is. There's no shortage. There's no shortage of clever potential if you're going to create some new names. But you can't mess around with the AJ Foyt.
Well, I'll just put it this way. Unless the stake is named the Indiana Derby or Indiana Oaks, they're all.
Oh, they're all eligible for it. All right.
Yes.
I love it. It's so great. Eric, thank you so much. And best wishes to you and everybody for the holiday season. And, you know, closing out this week, we'll talk to Bill Downs, and I'll probably try to get Rachel and Nancy in too over the next few days to kind of wrap things up for a very successful 2020 for Indiana Grand. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Eric Hallstrom, and he's been really a difference maker, without a doubt. And I'm not kidding. I mean, John Schuster was an absolute. I mean, the only GM they ever had. I mean, they think about that, and you know, just untimely passing. What, a year ago, December. You know, you have to react, and they went out and they found Eric Hallstrom, and it's just been strength to strength, and then to get to, you know, to add in Chris Paulson as well. It's funny, the Chicago loses Paulson, but they get stuck with Tony La Russa. We'll stay here. We got about 20. You know that. I mean, I've my disdain for LaRusse is, has been well established. I've told those stories. We'll stay here. We're going to visit with, as promised, we're going to get a chance to talk to Kelly Breen. KJB, Kelly John Breen, is going to join us. Case, give him a call. He's ready for us. And Kelly's tough sometimes in the mornings because he's out on the pony. First I said, how about 9:40? And then, you know, an hour and a half later, nope, that's not going to work. He sent me a note, but he's ready to talk now. And I got a bunch of stuff for Kelly, because last week, I mean, obviously the nice third place finish by Firenze Fire, and maybe it's Firenze Fire's turn next year, to come back and like Whitmore, and keep trying, in the sprint. But he ran very well and frankly ran a good third with trouble. Meanwhile, while that was happening, then of course on Sunday, Kelly came back last week and, wins the Nashua with Pickin' Time with Trevor McCarthy. Now there's also another interesting horse that seems to be emerging. Kelly Breen joins us. Kelly, good morning.
How are you? Good afternoon.
good to talk to you. And I had there. It's funny. Even before Breeders' Cup, there was a couple of things you and I kind of misconnected because you'd had a few stake wins and some horses emerging, and we can kind of tie them all up together. Let's talk about the big horse before we do anything else, because certainly you got a good effort from Firenze in the sprint, and if he doesn't have, you know, the trouble early, who knows what, you know, what there. I don't know if anybody was beating Whitmore, but, you know, certainly you've got a nice accounting, you and Ron Lombardi.
Yeah,
from Firenze.
Yeah, very proud of him. Very proud of him.
Talk about the trip you know, what your thoughts were going in and coming out.
I thought it was a little bit of an odd race, maybe that, the track was playing so fast that a lot more riders were being more speed favoring and more aggressive.
Yeah.
And that kind of put us at a disadvantage that, you know, we were outfooted the first 50 yards or so. And, you know, he's normally a fast horse, but just trying to keep up with, you know, the track playing so fast that it really threw the race off. And I think that's why we came from so far back, because everyone was sending. And that's just my interpretation. That's what I saw in the race.
And that, you know, that race was late enough in the card where we had already had Friday and we had, you know, half the card on Saturday. And you know, it was pretty clear. And would you say, I mean, you certainly have competed over, you know, different kinds of tracks. One of the things that seems to have been concluded is that it wasn't necessarily a biased track as much as it just was playing really fast.
Yeah, but I think it was also enough maybe later on in the day. But you saw the earlier races, they're setting track records left and right. It was a fast track, and fast horses run fast.
Right.
But when the, I don't know if it was the mile, that they went in a half mile, an unbelievable, you know, 44-4 or something like that. Those horses, generally any racetrack, they're not around at the finish. So it's hard to say. But to me, it was enough of a speed bias track. I think our race for the sprint was a little bit biased just by everybody saying, hey, if you want to, you can't be worse than two lengths out of it and win. So more jockeys than not were sending coming out of the gate.
Yeah, and that put him, I mean, that was, that's as far back as, right? That's about as far back as I think I can ever remember him being in a race.
Yeah, I couldn't believe to say to watching it next to Ron Lombardi and saying, I think they just called us 11th. couldn't believe it.
Well, you know, he certainly has had a good season, and you can't be unhappy. He's going to be six. I know that you're looking at the Cigar Mile. Dave Greinich reported on that over the weekend. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, what you learned about him as the year went on. I mean, he's run six times for you at this point.
You know, he's a work in progress. He's a very nice horse, very nice to look at. Just trying to figure out where we go from here. You know, we're not quite sure. We had two people look at him for breeding, actually a third that Ron had called me up about. So we have people that are interested in him. Ron's, you know, owns him 100%, and he's like, I could just as well race. I enjoy running, and Ron really enjoys running at the high level. He had a group of friends for the Breeders' Cup, and we had a good time.
That's, you know, that's one of the realities. I mean, that you've got a chance to, you know, maybe come back. I mean, he's now run what? Was that his third or was that his third Breeders' Cup try of different
ilk?
I think
it was his fourth. He's run it from 2, 3, 4, and 5. Yeah,
exactly. There you go. From the juvenile straight through. And why can't he be like Kona Gold or Whitmore and, you know, and win it in the next try?
You know, the only thing about right now, you're coming off of a $2 million race, is a little bit of the purse difference in sprinters also. You know, how many more does he have him at this level before a horse like Nashville comes up and the younger, you know, horses start running those fast 100 buyers and everything? So I'm in for whatever Ron decides as for racing, running. You know, he's a cool horse to be around, but at the same time, you got to weigh what he could possibly be worth as a stallion somewhere, and see his kids run around.
Well, absolutely, and Ron's program. I mean, he's got not only does he have his own mares that, you know, that he's producing runners. In fact, we'll talk about a first-time starter later at Aqueduct this week. But, you know, I'm sure he would be quite willing to go out and get mares to support Firenze Fire wherever he stands.
Exactly.
Well, right now, Cigar Mile, and I'm going to guess that, what, when was his last mile? Was it the Met last year?
I don't know. Everything's for me.
I think so.
7 furlongs or shorter.
Yeah, exactly. This year he's been 6, 6.5, and 7 with the True North win, of course, and you know, the Vaz, the great performance in the Vosburg. And he's been okay at he's run at Aqueduct. Firenze Fire, and obviously there's at least one more start, I suppose. If he was to win the Cigar Mile, then he's definitely going to stud, because there'll be a lot more knocking on the door.
You know, the one of the guys that was inquiring was overseas, and
ooh,
they're having a little bit of issues with the taking horses over to Japan. You know, so that throws a little quirk into it. As for who's, you know, I don't know if to say how many spots they had, but I think the first trip, if it was explained correctly to me, right after the sale, that was canceled. So there's a limited amount of spots. So, you know, maybe if it falls back into Ron's lap and into my lap, and I have another nice horse to run for the next year, it won't hurt me.
No. I can fully understand. Well, you know, you mentioned the up and coming types. You may have one of your own. Talk about Full Impact from the other day.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. I hope to say that he's is going to be a little bit more of a distance horse, but in his first two races, he's still a little bit green, but he has a lot of potential. I have another horse that is down in Florida that did the same sort of thing at Monmouth Park. What's his name? He breezed 2 days ago. Anyway, but he's 2 for 2, a horse that was lightly raced. And these horses that are bred to go longer, that are doing good going short, you know, he's got his whole future ahead of him. So he's doing quite nice, came out of the race good, and we'll see. You know, trying to groom him into being a nice four-year-old.
He's a Street Sense colt, and he's out of the Even the Score mare, Four Gifts. Barry Becker and Judy Becker bred a $140,000 Keeneland yearling that Ben Glass bought for the Wests, and debuted at Monmouth in October and comes right back at Aqueduct on Friday and wins again by open lengths. Joe Bravo booted him going 6. This was 6.5. And, you know, what are you going to wait, bring him down south, or what?
No, right now he's staying in New York. The purses are so good in New York that you have to support them.
Nice.
West Willpower was the name of the other horse that ran is 2 for 2. Had an unbelievable workout yesterday at Palmetto's. It's a split up a couple horses. We took him down to Florida, and we left some up in New York. So it's a nice mix. We got some nice horses, lightly raced. You know, we're in a good spot. It's nice to have some nice horses, that's for sure.
Well, and you know, I was going to include as part of this discussion, you know, the way in which you have really, I can think back to when the word came. You and I talked about it a year ago plus at the opening of the William Hill book, and mm-hmm. you were having to make the adjustment away from, you know, the private, essentially the private client relationship, and, you know, you were going to be taking on new clients, and you've really, I mean, anybody paying attention knew that, you know, sending horses to you was going to be a productive decision, and you've gotten a lot of new faces in the barn.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I'm so proud of my barn, so proud of the help. And at the same time, for me anyway, it's a lot of fun. You know, when I was had some nice horses running in big races, and you could start pointing horses for, you know, or if you have a couple of different three-year-olds, and you take one, we're going to have one up north, we're going to have one down south, we could have one in, the, you know, going to Kentucky if we had to. 1 year I ran a horse, I had 3 fillies at the same time, and we had to take one out to California to run out there. That is, to me, is excitement. That is the epitome of horse racing.
Well, you have done some things this past couple of weeks. I mentioned the win in the Nashua. Let's also talk, you know, we mentioned Full Impact, and people can track, you know, what's up for him. How quickly will you test him against State Company?
You know, he's going to need some time. That was an effort. You know, I didn't hear anything about sheet numbers or anything like that, but it was an effort. And I think, talking with Ben Glass, who's very instrumental in the West, trying to figure out where we're going to run and what we're going to do, they know that they've been around, and they know that horses need time off of an effort, and I don't see him running back for at least 5 to 6 weeks to keep him going forward. If you have to not have him, quote-unquote, bounce, but let him get over himself, let him be 100% ready, and run them when they're 100%.
Absolutely. I completely concur. Full Impact with, what, a 94 buyer, and, you know, coming off the 86 in the debut. So healthy development and plenty of upside on this soon-to-be four-year-old. And everybody should also write down the counterpart down south, West Willpower. Talk, though, about the Jersey bred. You did, you're given a nice boost to the Jersey bred program by winning graded stake races. Pick and Time wins the Grade 3 Nashua last Sunday.
Yeah, we had a really good run with some Jersey breds. John Bowers breeds a really nice horse, you know, goes out of state. They're kind of like Kentucky breeds that are born in his backyard. This horse, from the day that we got him, very classy and very big. That was one of his things that I couldn't believe that he won the 6 furlong stake at Monmouth Park, because he just doesn't really act like one of those horses that's supposed to be overly precocious. But as, for as big as he is and as long as his stride is, he's a nice horse.
Pickin' Time is who we're talking about, and you know, you were obviously impressed, even though his maiden win came back with a pretty modest figure. He's a Stay Thirsty out of a King of Kings mare, and you were sufficiently comfortable trying him in the Saratoga Special.
Yeah, and you also had limited spots of Monmouth Park, some of their stakes. You know, they say that we won the stakes race, the sprint at Monmouth. He gets a little bit of a bonus for being a Jersey bred. But for some reason, Monmouth Park had some races that were on the grass that just weren't up for him. You know, we didn't want to test him. We didn't want to try him. We ran Pickin' Time, and, you know, not to say as an entry, but I had another horse in there but that finished fourth that day that has Garoppolo, who's quite a nicely well-bred horse of Mr. Amore's for Ron Lombardi, and hope to see him back. He had colic surgery, and he should be coming down, whether it's going to be to my barn in Belmont or my barn in Florida, Palmetto's. He's another horse that is just, you know, he's got to catch up now to Pickin' Time. But we took two horses, took two chances at Saratoga. He didn't break all that well. And it was a big learning experience, but he's got his mind on it. He's kind of like a freight train, and once he gets running, it's hard to stop him. So I think I've learned more about him in the last month or so, and now the jockeys are learning more about him. Like Trevor knew him. Joe Bravo actually called me up right before the race and said, "Give me a couple things to tell Trevor." So we're all on the same team. It's all working out.
Are you going to keep him, what distance-wise, how far, you know, does he want to go? This was obviously the one turn mile.
Well, you got the Remsen coming back. We're trying to figure out to see if Trevor McCarthy can ride him back. We got to worry about the COVID and if he's going to be able to come back to ride him. He did ride him very well. But sometimes when you have nice horses, I'm sure my phone will be ringing. There'll be other riders available when it comes to Pickin' Time.
Well, let's catch up. I got about 2 minutes or so, 2-3 minutes. Let me get some info, some prospect on a couple of young horses. Top Gun Tommy at Calder later this week on Thursday. This is a West homebred Paco in the fourth race.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. He's probably needs some more distance. Wasn't really to say he's not the top horse for the West. We're just going to let him run into shape a little bit. Hopefully he needed the distance in his first race. I have him. I have another horse for the West. It's kind of like the same thing where I don't know if he's at best is going to be an allowance horse, or if he, you know, turns the corner and goes forward. We'll give him a chance to see what they're going to do. You know, we have a similar horse like that up in New York, bred for the grass, doesn't seem to like the dirt, and we're running, what's her name, the ruler, or what's her name?
The English Channel?
Yeah, the English Channel Philly is running up there first time out. Up at
perpetual change.
We have horses all over the place. I'm you know, I'm sitting outside of a COVID testing place so I can get a COVID test so I can get back into Aqueduct by Wednesday. So the things you got to do as a trainer, you know, not only I try to be a husband, a father, a trainer, and a COVID, you know, testing negative, so I got a little bit of everything going on.
Kelly, John Vrain, KJB, and Perpetual Change is a homebred of Ron Lombardi's. Eric Cancel is aboard for the debut. This coming up as well on Thursday. He's got a bunch of others at Gulfstream West and all over the place. Kelly, delighted. Things going so well. We look forward to picking time, maybe in the Remsen and Full Impact, and of course Firenze Cigar Mile coming up as well at Aqueduct. And make sure to pull a negative test.
You got it. That's what I'm doing. I just had to stand outside of the waiting room, but all good. And nice talking to you. And hope we win some more steak so I can get on your show again.
Absolutely. The one and only Kelly John Breen, everybody. Follow Kelly on Twitter under Kelly John Breen. And when you're at the racetrack, he's the guy in the pork pie hat most often. Well, this was a fast-moving 3 hours. Plenty of good racing today, including Indiana. And you know, since we talked to Teresa Luniak, Remington running today and tomorrow as well with Monday, Tuesday cards. So thanks to Teresa Luniak, Rich Migliori, Eric Hallstrom, and KJB, Kelly John Breen. Plenty more coming at you tomorrow with Andy. And we got to get Dr. Alde in here. And we're also going to talk to Bob Hutton. Get the latest on the Arizona situation. So good luck today, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM tomorrow. Website for podcast stream archive. Thanks. Thanks to KC back in Margate. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire All-Star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.